Like notes through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Thor Harris, Charmaine Lee, Sarah Hennies, Greg Davis, Helado Negro, Macy Stewart, Circuit de U, Lucy Liu. The list goes on and on and on and on, but this week I am so excited to have the one, the only, the inimitable Dorian Wood. She is just a total badass and a total sweetheart. The best combination. I don't know. I love Dorian so much. I say it over and over again. She's maybe my favorite singer in the entire world. Her music is, well, she's just always doing a lot of interesting stuff. She's really powerful, like, she's got this new song that came out a couple months ago, MML, which it's exactly what I need, what the world needs right now. But then she's got her, you know, her works on Dragon's Eye that are a lot more, you know, drone-based, experimental, moving in a whole other way, just sort of wrap themselves around you and just, I don't know, get into, like, your bloodstream. And, of course, her collaborative duo with Thor Harris, friend of the show, just absolutely phenomenal. One of the, I can't put enough superlatives around it. So links to all that stuff in the show notes. If you haven't heard, if you're not familiar with Dorian's work, what are you doing? All right. Yeah, this one was a blast. Dorian, love you. Hope you all enjoy listening. My guest today is a multidisciplinary artist, a composer, a director, a performer, frankly, one of my favorite singers in the whole wide world. It's Dorian Wood.
Woo!
Hi.
You're too much.
So, what's going on? Not much in the world these days, right?
Really? I mean, it's such a quiet time. A quiet time of contemplation. It's hot.
The world is figuratively and literally on fire.
yeah. We just got to feel it in all ends, and that's what's happening. But that said, you know, I'm grateful to be here. Doing things and glistening in the summer sweat. So grateful and furious and grateful.
Something I've just kind of always wondered, like, listening to your work and stuff, is I'm curious, when you started singing and really, I don't know, sort of connecting with your voice. I've said, you're one of my favorite singers, and I'm really curious where it all began.
Oh, thank you. You're so sweet. I started making music very early on in life. I did my first piano recital at 4, and my grandfather, he was a classically trained pianist from Nicaragua, but he made a bit of a name for himself in Costa Rica. And when he moved to the States, he wanted to be a music professor, and he needed to get all of this accreditation. He needed to get all this accreditation, and he just needed to find work. So he wasn't able to really make it as professor. So he did music on the side, and he taught me to play piano very early on. And I think around that time is when I figured that I was very results oriented, which meant that I wanted to learn everything in the moment, make everything sound a specific way in the moment. So if I couldn't do it with the proficiency of the piano that he wanted me to play with, then I would just mimic it with my voice. So early on, that's what I started doing. And it just became a matter of my fingers keeping up with my voice to try to flesh out melodies. And I was really like obsessed with melody from a very early age. And I think my relationship with what a melody sounds like and where it takes us emotionally has really been what's brought me here.
That's wow. That's kind of leading into, so you're most recently, you've got the song that Foxy Digitalis actually premiered, the MML, the song and video. And I love that song. Can you just tell me a little bit about, like, or tell me, tell us listeners a little bit about the song, a little bit about the piece?
Just what we were talking about earlier, how, just me being grateful and furious. Like I've learned to not embody those in a conflicting way, but rather as just, a reminder of how we embrace complexity, in every waking moment, and how we should just surrender to that. And I don't usually feel inspired when I'm depressed, and I've been very depressed. And yet I wanted to direct my energy into what I feel is a broader reality that many times we are robbed of, because that's what oppressors like to do, is rob us of any hope in the reality that we are faced with every day. So in having conversations with literally everyone that I know, the reality to me is that most people, and I don't think I live in an echo chamber, really most people, wherever we look, whatever encounters that we have, it's reflected in most people's frustrations with how things are, and fear and anger. And it's all founded on, the sappiest thing that they've sold back to us over and over. But it truly is the most radical thing, which is love. I mean, it's all rooted in love. And when I, when I direct my energy, into the radicalness of love, then something happens that is not what we're conditioned to believe love is. It's not, it's not a heart-shaped box filled with candy. It's bloody. It's sweaty. It inflicts pain upon those who inflict pain on us. It takes us, to the boundaries of, of what we feel is morally correct in our minds and in our hearts to accomplish justice, to accomplish peace. And that's what I wanted to address with the simplest phrase, repeating it over and over like a little sermon, which is what I feel, again, like the broader reality, I am part of a massive mouthpiece of love. And that's really what it is. When we talk about wanting to, to bring an end to the genocide in Gaza, of Palestinians, the occupation of Gaza, the persecution of, of brown people, of black people, of trans people, it's love. It cannot be disputed. And therefore, it's all linked. It's all connected. Yeah. We are all connected in this collective pursuit. And that is radical. I mean, clearly, they want us dead for right. wanting to reclaim love. So that is, that's really it. And I just didn't know how else to verbalize it. And I didn't want to get too wordy. It was just the absolute core of what I feel. And a reminder to myself when I get really, really down, you know, remember, I am part of a massive mouthpiece of love. It's as simple as that. And yet, still incredibly radical and
out yeah. there. I mean, yeah, no, God, I mean, I feel like I've been having those conversations too. And like you were saying at the beginning there, like once they get us to stop hoping and to stop dreaming of better and different and all those things, it's like, that's when we're that, I mean, that's what they want. Yeah. And like many people in the last year, whatever, like had these very down moments, but these last few months, like I had a very particular moment a couple weeks ago. I don't know what is time, but I was in like a very not great place. And I will say, like, this song really was, I remember just blasting it on the stereo. Like, nobody else was home, and it just, yeah, there's something really, I don't know. I don't even know if I have the words for it, even though I already have written words about it. The words for what this, like, I love this song. I really do. And I'm glad I get to tell you this, like, quote unquote in person. But,
thank you.
Yeah, yeah. real quick, before we get into the questions, I was just going to ask if there's anything happening, or even if you can talk about anything with your collaboration with friend of the show, Thor Harris, because again, I love what y'all have been doing together.
Oh, I love that man so much. I didn't mean to sound like I was orgasming as I was responding.
I mean, he is just like this beautiful ball of light and of this beacon in the world.
I mean, it's hard not to orgasm just at, you know, at the very mention of this. I will own up to that. We are working on new things, and I am very, very excited for what is coming from us together. So that's kind of all I can say right now, but it is... It's just absolute, you know, again, talking about, like, you know, the radicalness of love. I mean, Thor embodies that. And,
yeah,
you know, this is why, like, working with him has always been so easy. There is this, you know, underlying fury, you know, within the love that doesn't need to be overexplained or pleaded for. It's like, it's there, and he understands it because his heart is very true, and it's huge. Always excited to work.
I can't wait. Yeah. Thor is, there's nobody like him. Nope. Okay. Well, I don't have any good segue here, so we're just going to go into it. and talk about the songs, and we're going to start, as always, I'm going to ask, what is the first song that you remember?
Oh. So there was... the very first song I remember was... there was this children's music singer-songwriter from Mexico called Cri Cri. And this was his alter ego was Cri Cri, and Cri Cri was a cricket. And it was an album filled with these gorgeously arranged and performed children's songs. Of course, you know, we're talking about an era long, long ago, so some of them are very very problematic. But there's one that really sticks out that's called Di Porqué. And Di Porqué is about, it's a song that is sung from the perspective of a child to his grandmother, asking her, why do you look so wrinkled? I mean, not, this sounds so like callous, but it's actually asked in a very sweet way. Why do you look so wrinkled? Like why do you suddenly start weeping? Why do you no longer jump on the beds like we do? And it's a very sweet song, and it's beautifully sung. And and I remember as kids, because you know my sister and I were a couple of little shits, we would sing it to our grandmother and change the lyrics around and just make it really offensive, and she'd tell us, shut up. So that's my earliest memory.
I love that. Oh my god, I looked this up. Yeah, it's so beautiful. Like I had no idea anything about it, and like, but it just, I don't know, like melodically and musically, I found it very moving.
Wow. Yeah. It's a gut wrencher. It's a gut wrencher. Yeah. It's it's really pretty, but yeah, when you put it in the hands of actual children, it's yeah, it can turn like evil very quickly. So, and that's who we were. That's who we were.
I love that. Well, speaking of things that are very beautiful and gut-wrenching, what is a song that will make you cry, or at least like if it doesn't actually make you cry, it'll make you feel that kind of way?
Hands down, Lilac Wine by Nina Simone.
Oh,
hands down. It is. I remember I was applying for work at a Starbucks in LA, and this was at a time when I just desperately needed work. I was in my late 20s, and I'm sitting there at the Starbucks with three other applicants, and we're trying to get through this dumb application, and all of a sudden Lilac Wine by Nina Simone comes on. I had never heard it before, and
oh my gosh, wow.
I stopped and I just started crying, and I looked around at everyone, and I was so resentful at everyone in the Starbucks for not stopping and crying their eyes out at this perfection of a performance and recording and in an interpretation. And then of course some time later Jeff Buckley did his version, and it's a note for note, cadence for cadence version of the Nina Simone song. So you know, nothing against Jeff Buckley, but it's an imitation of what Nina Simone did, and I can't sit through that. Like even like thinking about like certain phrases in that song, the way she sings them, I start getting choked up. So I want to talk about it.
Yeah, no. Whenever I saw this on your list, like a lot of times, like I try to listen to stuff again, and I'm like, I'm not listening to this right now. I can't.
Oh no.
I can't handle it right now. It's like, cause yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on, because everything you just said is, I agree with completely. I can't even imagine how surreal that'd be. Like, yeah, sitting there trying to fill out a fucking Starbucks application and song, God. Like, what? Like, yeah, fuck this. Oh God.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but you know, it's just really like, you know, like just the goddess Nina, like at that point, just telling you, you know what, you just got to get through this, dumb application, get to this fucking job, and this is not going to be where your life, you know, stalls. This is just a little bump, but Lilac Wine is forever. So
yeah,
boy,
amazing, amazing song. Yeah. Well, on the other side, what is the song that'll put you in a better mood?
God, there are several, and I think one that is one that just really that like will like just legit put a smile on my face is even thinking about it is just, oh, it just makes me so happy. It's a song called Next Time Might Be Your Time by Blue Jean Tyranny. And I heard this song, I will confess that I rely a lot on friends to expose me to music, and you know, the age old thing of sharing a song that you like on Facebook and having that, you know, take you down a rabbit hole of discovery and appreciation of that artist, or, you know, just, you know, anything having to do with that song. And that was an instance where my friend Adam Baron shared this song on Facebook, and actually I think Blue Jean Tyranny had just passed, and I was just, oh, like I was stunned. I was stunned that something that you know, that it was like, that it was married with the news of his passing, and yet this incredibly joyous song is like blaring through my speakers, and I just heard it in a loop for days. I'm like, this song is so complex and long.
Yeah.
And just joyous, what a magnificent piece of songwriting, and that just took me, you know, through like the journey of loving his music, and yeah, like I just started just devouring like his albums,
yeah,
and how everything is so different, and yet like there's this. It's almost like this childlike curiosity quality to all of it that is so endearing. There's so much heart to what he did. Like it's kind of like a huge catalog of like just glorious work. Mm-hmm. But this song in particular, and it's funny because he didn't really do anything like this song aside from this.
Right.
Like nothing sounds like this song. Like, you know, I mean, some of it is very, like it almost feels like stream of consciousness
yeah,
type of like playfulness, and but it's so engaging. Like his piano work is beautiful, but this song is like this perfect pop. And I say that with the greatest reverence. Like it's and it just, I will, you know, I, you know, I'll hear like just the first, like, you know, strums of like, and it's, God, I just ruined it, but it always just puts a big fat smile on my face. Love that song.
Yeah. I love this song and I love him. He is, I don't know, probably among my like favorite musicians or composers ever. I don't know. There was a documentary that came out a couple of years ago. I don't remember when exactly it came out. It's called like Conversations with and About Blue Jean Tyranny. I think I should have written this down, but I did write down, there was this quote in it that really resonated with me that he was saying. He said that music was a source of solace, but also a means of deeply informing myself that there's another world, and music is my way of being in the world. And it just hit me like right in the gut, like, made me realize, it's like, oh, no wonder I love this man's music so much, because I feel that so in my bones. I love this song.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's a good one.
Well, if it's not Blue Jean Tyranny, then what is objectively the greatest song of all time?
My. These are all very simple questions. And
right. No, no big deal.
Now and on. I I only value like this response based on what this song does to me every single time that it pops up out of nowhere. Like if it's, I hear it like, just like somewhere like out and about, or if it just pops up like, you know, on like my streaming or like whatever, like anytime it becomes like this event, and it really is what makes River Deep Mountain High so like, yeah, still that and like and so it's like the version, obviously, like the Ike and Tina version that was done, that is really Tina Turner and Phil Spector. the other horrible human being in her life. Between him and Ike, holy shitballs, like, you know, what a time.
That's a whole lot of digging horrible
the bottom
right
of the barrel of humanity right there. How could this song ever come about, you know, with those two, you know, those two, like, you know, turds on a stick, just navigating the whole thing. And it's her. I mean, it's really like this. It's a song, and I, you know, that I pause everything, you know, unlike Lilac Wine to cry, this song is almost like to fear what could happen, you know, if all of a sudden something caught fire in the room because the song is playing. It's really, that's that powerful. It's concentrated energy and focus, and it's her, and it's, this song is her. It's like the goddess Tina, just taking us to like the root of yearning for like childhood love, and how it turns into this this fiery, rocket ship, you know, like launching right into like the pelvis of the sun type of moment that really is, you know, you're just like, what's going to happen to this world because the song is playing. That's how I feel. It's that truly, you know, makes it, and you know, as close to the best song of all time as I can imagine, in that, like, if another civilization, you know, beyond who we are, were to hear this song, they would know that we were a civilization to fear.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like if some alien civilization heard this, they'd be like, oh, maybe we don't fuck with them.
Right, right.
If this is what they're capable of. Yeah. I mean, it like simultaneously stops time, but like transcends time altogether.
Completely.
And like you said, but I think it's such an important point that the reason it does all of those things, it's her. It's not.
Oh yeah.
It's her.
It's her. Yeah. It's just like unreal energy and passion and just, I can't with that song. I can't. And any day of the week I can, but I also can't.
Right. Well, and it, for, kind of opposite of that, what's a song that you used to really love? Like it did it for you, but now you like heard it recently, you think about it now and you're like, not so much.
You know, it came on the other day, and it brought an eye roll out of me that I had to dig a little deep and figure out why, like what did the song ever do to me? I know, like, you know, we consider like certain songs have been overplayed, and And maybe I did this to myself. To me, like a song that comes to mind like that is Sour Times by Portishead. I remember when it first came out, I'm like, this is so great. This is just so layered, so, you know, so beautifully depressing. And
yeah,
like Beth Gibbons, that voice, and I love her, and I love Portishead.
Right.
This song just needs to die. And I just, that's what I felt. No. That's what I felt, and I'm, you know, and I go to therapy every week, and I'm like, why am I feeling like this about this song? And like, what is really at the core of this? And I don't know. There's like the very first few notes of the song, just like, oh, like change it, stop it. I'm done with this song. And I think it's, it was maybe like the introduction to who they were. And they, you know, I feel like what they've put out since then is far more interesting.
Right.
Than that song. And I think maybe it just in my mind and in my heart, I still, I hold it to what they, you know, ultimately were, you know, have been doing. I mean, I really love their work, and you know, the it's like the best show I've ever been to this date is Portishead at the Santa Monica Civic. It was the best show. Wow. I've ever been to. It was incredible.
Wow.
There's nothing that I've been to many shows. There's nothing that equals what that show was, and I was so close, and like just it was perfection. It was amazing. And yet I can't fucking stand the song. I like, and I don't even, and I think they did a version of it, even like the weird, like rockier version that they did of this. That was just kind of like a little grungier, like, oh, I just hated it. And it's still the best show in the country. I fucking hated that version.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, there is no way of doing the song justice. Or this song doing justice to this. I just, this song is no, there's no justice in this world with this song playing. So I don't know if it's a song.
Yeah.
The most, but I just do not, I, you know, I can't with this song, and I won't.
Yes. Well, I think it's like such a good point of like, this is the song everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of their worst song. Like, and I'm like, I don't, you know, I mean, it's like, if this is all you know, you are missing out on one of the, like, truly one of the greatest bands of the last 30 years.
Oh, seriously.
And yeah, it has nothing to do with this.
It's like a paint by numbers song.
Yeah. Well, okay. What's a song that people, whoever these people are, some group of people, some person, I don't know. People hate it. You don't care. You love it.
Oh, this is an easy one. This is a really easy one, because every single person that I tell this to, every single person's like, you like that song. That song is fucking shit. And people like will like wash their mouths with this, you know, just pure hatred for this song. Like, it's like somehow makes them better in this world. Like, just, you know, like it just increases their humanity to fucking hate the song. And it's not why I love it, though. I genuinely love Bat Dance by Prince.
Dude, people hate, man, fuck that. Bat Dance rules.
Right?
Bat Dance is it's just like, it's so weird. And the video too, I was watching the video yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's totally bananas. It's all, oh my god, the overall like vibe is just pure, it's wild. I don't know, to me it's, Prince made this in 1989. People haven't caught up yet. It's
no, no they haven't. It's so wacky. It's I agree. People have not caught up yet, and it's been a long time, and they still haven't. And I don't, you know, I do not know why, but I know in my heart though that this song is, yeah, it's brilliant. It's so, and yeah, it's nuts. It's like what, like like what like executive for like well, from what like you know heap of cocaine just to green light this and be like, yeah, this is going to be the theme for this new franchise that we're launching. This song, it's like ridiculously long too. It's so long. It's so,
yeah.
It's not like, yeah, simple. It's like it's not danceable, really. I mean, it, well, I've danced. Really. I fucking love doing dishes to this song. This song is with me at the gym a lot. This song is another happy place for me. I mean, it's right up there with
yeah.
me, with the Blue Jean Tyranny. It's great though. And the video is amazing. The video is just it's experimentation. it's again just being given yeah. this check and just like do whatever you want.
I know.
I thought that's what people loved about him, and I guess not enough to like this song, because most people that I talked to have said that this is the one song by Prince they cannot stand, and they will like lick his balls over any other song that he did, but this one is like, yeah, I don't fucking
get it. All those people are wrong. That's all.
Well, that's like, very clear. That is very clear. It's not, yeah.
I don't know. Watching the video, I was just like, God, I wish I lived in the timeline where Prince got to make like a full length Batman movie.
Oh, God. Yeah,
that would have been amazing.
You know, I did a version of this song once.
Really?
I did, yeah. I used to have this thing on Patreon called Anthology of the New Depression. And for 3 years, I covered a different song every Friday. So,
oh wow,
over 150 songs that I did, because this all started during pandemic, of course. But then I just got to a point like last year where I'm like, yeah, I can't keep doing this. And it was one of the last ones that I did was a piano and voice version of Bat Dance. And
wow.
Because they said it couldn't be done. And I don't know if it should have been, but I had a good time doing it. And you know, people who know the song got a few chuckles out of it. But I really put so much heart into it. I think it was the song itself has a lot of potential for being very heartfelt and But
that's awesome.
Oh yeah, man. it was a good time.
Oh man. Well, I'm Team Bat Dance, so I don't know how many there are of us, but we're right. What is the most romantic song?
Oh, I love romance. I love romance. I love being romanced. But I love the. I love brutal honesty with anything, and certainly with romance. And I have I often have fantasies of slow dancing with someone to the song called "I Know" by Fiona Apple. It really is up there, I feel, with one of the most revered slow dancers in recorded history. You know, just that one lyric that always sticks with me, like, you know, and you can use my skin to bury secrets in, and I will settle you down. And like she ends the song like, it's okay, don't need to say it. And that is just to be understood like that, you know, through the lens of love, is pretty powerful stuff. And to have it be manifested in this. The gorgeously sung and written song by, you know, what I truly believe was one of the greatest songwriters of our time, Fiona Apple. is this song is just always hits the spot, and I've yet to slow dance to this one, but I hope that someday would be nice.
It's a hell of a song. And I can't believe she wrote this when she was 21 years old.
Yeah.
Like
a baby.
Like, holy shit. That's unbelievable. But,
baby.
Oh, yeah. There's something that's just, it's like so beautiful and kind of brutal and just, and the melody and the sort of like snake-like, the structure of it. Love. I've never slow danced to this either, but that does sound like the thing I need to do in my life before it ends.
Well, before the week is over, you and I, Brad, you and I.
Yes. we will play this song and slow dance together in the blistering heat.
There
and
you
just speak.
As the goddess
reduced to a puddle.
Indeed. Yes. We love a good puddle.
Oh, gosh. Hey, that sounds pretty great. Good way to go out.
Gotta go out somewhere.
All right. What is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
For years, there were always murmurs around me about how I should listen to, based on what I was doing musically at the time, like years and years ago, lots of murmurs about how I should really listen to Scott Walker. Mm. And I remember hearing like his older stuff. And I thought it was very, very pretty. His voice was lovely to hear, and it was like I remember at a friend's house, I started hearing some of this album that he had just put out called The Drift. And I was like, what the fuck is this? it fucking scared the shit out of me. And yet I understood why it should and why people were murmuring this entire time for me to listen to it, to Scott Walker. And I'm like, oh, you meant this Scott Walker. Oh, so then I really started getting into The Drift. But then like after I had just rubbed that album all over my body, I came across a song that he had done around that time. That was for a compilation, called Plague Songs. And he did this song called Darkness. I have never since then or before then or ever heard anything like that song. Technically a gospel song. I don't know. having heard, The Drift, and then like years later, having, seen the 30th Century Man documentary, which was magnificent and really worth watching for anyone who's never seen it. Like, if you want to know what this guy did, like, holy shit, just really like treat yourselves. This song though, is a banger. It's unsettling in the way I like things to be unsettling, and and also really like provided a glimpse into this this beautifully unique mind that that probably, like with all the other artists on this compilation, took the prompt of creating something that was inspired by, you know, by the like the biblical plagues, and to create, you know, and there's some wonderful things on there. There's like a great track by like Tiger Lilies on there, and Brian Eno, and but this song in particular though is it sounds like a death cult. It sounds like this you know, this gospel choir on the verge of drowning. It's miraculous that anything could ever you know be created that is this song. That is it's so beautiful. It's beauty and fucked up.
Yes. it's like it's so beautiful and like totally unnerving, and I've never heard anything like it before. I never heard anything like it since. I don't that choir, this I don't know, the way to come up with that and like, and then to contrast it with his like lone voice and this back and forth sort of
Oh god.
It's so good. So good.
It's a good time.
I'm so like Scott Walker has come up on this podcast before, but I love that you pick like this is such a I feel like this is like a Scott Walker deep cut, and even people I know who are Scott Walker fans haven't like I've turned them onto this song. I'm just like, no, this is like one of the Scott Walker songs to me. So yeah. Well, Scott Walker has written some really great fucked up lyrics, but right. If it's not darkness, what are your favorite lyrics?
There's a lyric that. I don't have any tattoos, and there's a number of reasons why I want to, but I just haven't gotten any tattoos, and you know, I'm 50, but who knows? And there is a phrase
that I'm in the same boat, so I feel like I'm 46 and I don't have any tattoos, and I feel like I'm closer than ever, but I haven't done it.
Yeah, you and I are very alike. We are very alike. My mom always said, be the different one. Be the one who doesn't have anything. And I'm not, and that's not the reason why I haven't gotten any tattoos, but damn, that shit has stayed with me. So if there were, you know, people get song lyrics tattooed on themselves. Mm-hmm. And like, or like, and this, there's like a lyric that might as well be tattooed on my body, but it's just tattooed on my soul, you know, for those who believe in souls. And I remember hearing the lyric for the first time, and it just fucking slapped me in the face. It just blew me away. And the song is really beautiful. But it's like the last lyric of the song. And, it's the song, Across the Night, by Silverchair. They did, this album, I think it was called Diorama, that was, I believe it was produced by Van Dyke Parks, if I remember correctly. And, it has like some really interesting songs on there. I think some of them were really, really great. Others, I don't quite remember, but this is like the opening song, and it's this lush orchestral jam. And then the lyric that it ends with that just really stays with me is, I don't want to be lonely. I just want to be alone. It's something that, yeah, like I, It made all the sense in the world to me when I first heard it. Like my whole relationship with this world and with being around people and love as something that I onboard as, you know, this radical act, this radical embodiment, and yet there is nothing I want more than to be completely alone, but not to be lonely in my aloneness. And that was just, and the way he sings it, like, you know, he lets it last alone, just fucking like he wails it out. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell. That is touching me on the inside. Real, real good. So yeah, I think that song is like that lyric just really accomplishes something. What the rest of the song has elements that seem like a little abstract or just deeply personal. Mm-hmm. With this one lyric though, I feel is really such a generous gift.
That's an incredible line. I mean, it's so, I could see that as a good first tattoo someday.
Yeah. Don't tell my husband, man. That's a long time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, really. It's okay.
No, it's not what you think. It's
it's not what you think.
I mean, alone with you, honey.
Yes. That's what I mean. Okay. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
I really have to like collect myself for a bit because this song is really this song is really like it's everything. It's for the longest time it was like my absolute favorite song, and I treated it as such. Like I've heard this song more than anything, certainly more than Ghostbusters. The song "You Haven't Done Nothing" by Stevie Wonder is everything that years I wanted in a song. It just, you know, like just social political commentary, transgression, soul, the Jackson 5, and everything, and just that, you know, that fucking like just, I mean, everything that, I mean, the way the song comes together, like the, like the synth and like the fucking like just rhythm section and those fucking horns and his fucking voice. Oh. It's like, oh my God, this song is just like, it's like, oh, it's like heroin. I've never tried it, but I'm sure it would be the song.
Right.
It's incredible. I mean, the song is just, you know, this song has also been like, you know, like the Put a Smile on My Face song. Many times, but this song is just like, you know, it's got something for everyone, I believe. I've played this on a loop like for days and days and days and days and days and days and days. And I mean, the album itself, Fulfillingness's first finale is a masterpiece, but the song on it is like, oh God, so good, so good.
Yeah, it's there. Oh God, I didn't even know for the longest time. I don't think I knew that it was like Jackson 5 doing the background vocals. And when I learned, I was like, of course, like it's one of the greatest songs ever. Of course, the Jackson 5 are on there. I love everything about it though. Like how it opens and it's all like spaced out arpeggios and like it kind of like feels like you're being whisked away to this other world, and then the just like funk hits and that clavinet, and then it's just like angry, pissed off, like, but so artful at the same time, like just and I also read that apparently Nixon resigned 2 days after the song came out. I'm gonna say they're like, it's like, come on, there you go.
Yes, can we,
yeah,
can we have a repeat,
Stevie, please? What you got for me in 2025?
Please, for fuck's sake, make it happen. Whatever needs to, whatever needs to, if you need to fucking redo this song, just switch it up a bit.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, that's, yeah, that's, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew it was about Nixon, but I didn't know that he resigned 2 days later. I'm like, that's a good time. That's a good song to revisit over and over.
It is. God, it is. It's, yeah. Well, on a completely different tip, what is the sexiest song?
Anything by Thor Harris. anyone who knows me, or maybe they don't know this, but like I absolutely worship Sinead O'Connor. It's, yeah, she's like, yeah, like to me, like there's like three artists whom I just like revere above many things in this world. I think Sinead O'Connor, Nina Simone, and Chavela Vargas. And Sinead has really been there for me since high school. When I was a blossoming teen, I became obsessed with I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got. And just every song, and you know, just screamed volumes at me of what I was feeling, all these changes happening. And the song Jump in the River, I remember, made me horny. And it was just this, like, her singing in this, like, this like very like just restrained lower octave, and just singing about this, you know, it's in sexual obsession connection with someone, and I just thought it was like the song, just like even like the way, like just kind of like this, you know, like almost like pulsating, like garagey type of song that's very different from anything else on that album. And and like that lyric that says like the times, like the times we did it so hard there was blood on the wall, and I'm like, oh, talking about sex. And at the time I had never had sex, so I'm like, is that even possible? And of course it is, I know this now. Blood if you're lucky.
Yeah, you're doing it right.
I mean, there you go. Like I said, I mean, yeah. So Jump in the River by is incredibly sexy. And then years later into my adulthood, I got to listen to the remix that had come out around that time, but I'd not heard it before. I was living in Costa Rica, so we didn't get things as soon as they came out. So in my early adulthood, I came across the remix by Karen Finley. And any subtle sexuality in the original version was just like amped up and like, you know, dolled up with a strap on. And it was just like the song went from being sexy to being actual fucking.
Yeah, right.
It's just, oh God, it was like so amazing. And just I love it. So yeah, it became even more sex. But yeah, yeah, I think Jump in the River by Sinead O'Connor is the sexiest song.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd ever heard the remix, or if I had, I didn't remember. And I was listening to this the other day and was just like, holy shit, this is, yeah, I need to, need a moment to compose myself. But it was, yeah, it's hot as fuck. That's what I was
saying. It sure is. Oh my. Indeed, indeed.
All right. Well, what is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but what you associate it with, who you associate it with, a certain memory, whatever.
This one's a little hard to speak to talk about. When I first got my own place and I was living in Silver Lake, and I got this one bedroom apartment for ridiculously cheap, and then the apartment next door became available and my cousin moved in. And my cousin and I hadn't talked for many years, and we had reconnected, and it was just absolute love. And he was like my little brother. And for a couple of years, we were neighbors, and it was heaven. It was just having my own place and coming into my own, and then having just this wonderful person who I connected with so beautifully living right next door. And we would just get stoned and listen to music. And he was a DJ, like a turntablist. And I'd go over to his place and, we'd get stoned out of our minds and then just go driving around. And one of the things that we would listen to a lot was Forever Changes by Love. And my cousin Eddie was someone who spoke like always out of just this this pure appreciation for music, and not like explaining why it is that he loves something, that he would just go on and on about how it made him feel. And and they had re-released Forever Changes with some alternate mixes. And there was the alternate mix for You Set the Scene that has this vocal at the end that had been faded out in the original version, but the alternate mix had the intact vocal. It was like the Arthur Lee and, I forgot who the other singer was. I feel terrible for not remembering, but... So they do like this kind of like harmonizing, like call and response vocalizing that's really pretty. And Eddie would be like, now isn't this better? Like, isn't this just better? Like, why would they not leave this in? It's just, and the song, that alternate mix doesn't fade out the way the original does. Like, it all just, it's, and Eddie and I, we're like, we're no longer in each other's lives, and it's very painful. But this song really reminds me of that, of both of us just being so stoned out of our minds one night and just agreeing on this, that this was the superior version of the song. Incredible song already, but this was like just right. Even better. And it's a song that wasn't given like the master gloss of the original, but even like in its gritty form is, it has so much more heart that perhaps is like spelled out more, but sometimes that's when I think about, just spelling things out just because I think of Eddie, and this song is, always makes me think of him, and I miss him terribly. If he ever gets to hear this, I want him to know that I love him very much, and I think of him often, and I will always remember. Wow. We got to see Love perform in L.A. One of the very last shows that they did, and I had like this horrible ear infection I'll never forget, and it was physically agonizing to see them perform, even though they sounded incredible, but like my ear was just like killing me. It was like a small venue too, and it was, it was great. It was great. He died like a few months later. Arthur Lee died. I went to see that show with Eddie, and you know, we were just, good times.
Man, yeah. Well, it's a hell of a song, and yeah. I completely agree that alternate mix is, it's one of those songs where it's like, when you first hear it, it's like, how can it get any better? And then you hear this alternate mix, like, oh, that's how. Okay.
Yeah.
It's really incredible.
For reals.
All right, we've made it to the end. What's your favorite song? At least in this moment in time, maybe it changes, but what is your favorite song?
See, I'm someone who embraces change. You know, even when I don't, I always acknowledge it. I identify as trans femme right now, and last year I identified as non-binary and so forth. And yet before this song, my favorite song of all time was You Haven't Done Nothing by Stevie Wonder for years. Which is curious that, like, you know, that I am just so fluid in my life. And that up until recently, I realized that my favorite song of all time, and I say of all time because I heard this song before I heard You Haven't Done Nothing by Stevie Wonder. And I remember being obsessed with it, but somehow I never really heard it as like a song, but I just remember like feeling that this song just is a space that I like to be in so much. And it's the song called Super Predators by Massive Attack. And I think in the same way that Darkness by Scott Walker sounds like nothing else, this song, which takes a sample or influence, I think actually a sample from Susie and the Banshees' Metal Postcard, which is a great song. But it takes the essence of that and turns it into this, this like distorted, slow moving, echoey, like just trip hop anthem. I don't know. It doesn't, like, man, I'm just throwing words. I don't really know how to describe the song. I mean, I'm doing a poor because I don't know what the song is really, other than, I mean, I guess like how Eddie used to talk about songs, like, you know, I know how it makes me feel. Like I want to want to be in the space of the song, and I close my eyes every time I hear this song, and I perceive the space very clearly, and I know what it does for me, and I know how it inspires me even. Where I think what the song really teaches me emotionally over and over is to never settle for creating something that sounds like something familiar, but to push yourself to fuck it up somehow. Tweak it in a way that takes you out of familiar and more into a nod to something familiar, perhaps, but that it becomes its own space. And I think this is what this song does for me. And I heard it for the first time, like, you know, Vault. I mean, I used to love like just soundtracks and you know, CD samplers. And I used to go into record stores and buy all this, like, you know, the advanced copies and CD samplers that there were. And just, I listened to so much music in that way. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's like a generation thing. And one of the soundtracks that I got, like, it was like $4 was the soundtrack for this awful movie called The Jackal with Richard Gere. And I forgot who else was in that. It's a terrible movie. I remember watching it. And it's just, I think it's Richard Gere, an Irishman. It's so awful, but the soundtrack is great. The soundtrack is really, really great. And there's a lot of really great electronica on it. And this was one of the songs on there. And I had never, like, I knew Massive Attack, but I'm like, this sounds like nothing they've ever done. And I mean, this sounds fucking wacky. I don't fucking care. This song is like this additional space in my life that I dwell in. Like, I go to this song and it's like, I feel like nobody can see me. Nobody can perceive me because I am lost in this song. And until it ends, you know, people have no idea what it is that I am. So, yeah, it's Super Predators.
it's a great song. I love that. It's a great song. Yeah. That is a perfect place to end. Dorian, this was an absolute delight.
Oh, thank you
so much.
Thank you so much, Brad.
Is there anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
I don't know. I'm working, like, it's hard for me. I mean, unless it's something that's coming out next week, I'm working, like, no joke, I'm working on 10 different projects right now, and I'm not gonna plug all of them because they're all like in different
places.
I'm working on guess the closest thing is, like, I have an album that I am currently in the mixing and mastering stage with, that is, it's a condensed version of my composition Canto de Todes, which is a 12-hour composition. And I realized early on that it would be a little demanding of people to have them sit through a 12-hour album. I'm not one of those people who would ever want to punish anyone in that way. However, if it comes to it, if the composition comes to, like, a, you know, to your town, like, you know, by all means go, you know, experience it, but you don't have to be there the whole 12 hours. It's a come and go as you please type of thing. But it is a 12-hour composition that unfolds across 12 hours. And the album is roughly an hour long that condenses that album as that composition as best as we could. But I'm very proud of it, and I hope people get to hear it sooner than not. But that is what I'm working on.
Awesome. I guess
soon.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. Well, everybody, just stay in the loop.
Yes.
Thank you to Dorian Wood. Wonderful show. Listen to all her picks in the link of the show notes. Playlist is awesome. And yeah, go support Dorian's work. She's always up stuff, and can't get enough. All right, that's it this week. Thanks, y'all, for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a rating, review. You can join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxydigitalis. You get a little bit extra, and the ongoing support just really helps keep this all going. And I appreciate everybody who signed up. Y'all are the best. But until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.